I'm Daniel Malloy. It is 10:08 in the morning on June 14th, 2022. I'm in the penthouse apartment of the Al Sharaf Towers across from Mr.
Louis Dupont-Dulac.
So, Mr. Dulac, how long have you been dead?
Welcome to the first Adrenaline Cinema podcast episode based on a television series. I'm Danny.
And I'm Mark.
And I'm Laura.
We are covering Anne Rice's Interview with the Vampire Season 1 on AMC. This will be a spoiler-full podcast about the show. So if you haven't seen the show, please stop the recording now and go watch it and then come back.
Yeah. And with that, Laura, can you give us the synopsis of the particular series too?
Yeah, the series follows the vampire Louis Dupont-Dulac, played by Jacob Anderson, who recounts his life with his maker Lestat de Liancourt, played by Sam Reed, and teenage vampire Claudia, played by Bailey Bass, to veteran journalist Daniel Malloy, played by Eric Bogosian, accompanied by ancient vampire Armand, played by Asad Zaman.
Mm, fun stuff. Right.
Yes.
Yeah, and keep in mind, listeners, this is an adaptation from an Anne Rice book, which was converted to a film back in 1990-something.
Four.
94. Okay. With Tom Cruise, Brad Pitt, the Nasonex guy himself, who you would call, what's his name?
Spacing it.
I'm spacing it,
well,
too.
I know Kirsten Dunst was in it as Claudia.
Kirsten.
And Antonio Banderas.
That's
Antonio
the Nasonex guy. Banderas.
Yes, as Armand.
There you go. All right. So, yeah, that was a very different, a little bit different from the book, but this is more of an extreme difference from the book to what we get from to the show itself. So that's the reason why I wanted this to actually come on to as like a just an overall season instead of episodically, because people are going to be like, when this first came out, a lot of people were like, not sure, because we got the movie was up and down when it comes to critics acclaim, fan acclaim. A lot of people didn't like Tom Cruise. People love Brad Pitt. Well, who doesn't love Brad Pitt, because he's a sexy dude? But also you had Kirsten Dunst in her first role, and on top of that, it was vampires. And then you had Christian Slater, too. Sorry. Yeah, it's like, yeah, Christian Slater. And the movie did very well for its time. It's very much legendary in the Anne Rice lore of movies that were created from her IP. And when this came out, I thought this would be perfect for a podcast. But I didn't want to jump right into it. The reason why is I wasn't sure as what people would think of it. Now it's being very much acclaimed. They have their own particular podcast for the show on AMC. And I highly recommend everybody actually go out there and listen to it as they watch each particular episode, if they go back to rewatch and re-listen. But with this, we're just going to go about our overall thoughts are for season one of Interview with a Vampire. And I believe they are continuing on with the series too, with the season two. So with that, we're going to go into people we may know within the show. Where have we seen them before? So Danny, you want to start us off?
Sam Reed, who plays Lestat, was in the Astronaut's Wife's limited series in 2015. Mm-hmm. The Hunting, which was another limited series in 2019. I'm not familiar with any of these shows. So this is my first time actually seeing Sam at anything.
Hmm.
And then we have Jacob Anderson, who plays Louis, which was hilarious when I found out that he was actually Grey Worm in Games of Thrones from 2013 to 2019. And he was on Doctor Who, which I've not seen, so I would not know him from there. And then we have Bailey Bass.
Actually, hold on. Let's move on.
Okay.
Doctor Who, 2021 to 2022. He was actually one of Doctor Who's, what, Lara? He is one of his companions or her companions.
I'm not
companions.
A Whovian. I'm right, sorry to disappoint you, Mark.
He was one of her companions. So it was the first female Doctor, Jodie Whittaker's doctor that and they were a companion. Laura, do you want to end us off with the last two that we have?
Sure. We have Bailey Bass, who plays Claudia. She was in a Jenkins Family Christmas in 2021. Didn't see Psycho Sweet 16 2022. Didn't see, but I did see Avatar The Way of Water, where she plays Tisiraya. She plays the daughter of the water tribe chieftain. And we also have Eric Bogosian, very well-known, respected actor, playing Daniel Malloy. He was in Talk Radio in 1988, Wonderland in 2003, and Uncut Gems in 2019. And Mark, I just pulled up Rotten Tomatoes, and Interview with the Vampire series has a 99% critic score and 75% audience score. So it did really well.
Did very well. Awesome. It's very cool that we get that. Kudos to all the actors and the writers and the producers and the directors and everybody else who works under that, too, because you got to give credit to those as well that are on staff. But if it wasn't for them, we wouldn't have the show that we're talking about. To add a little bit more, cameo appearance by Ray Dong Chong as Florence de
Portelac.
Okay. Oh, was that was the mother of Louis?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Yeah,
she was great.
Yep.
And as was the actress playing his sister.
Yes. And we all know Ray Dong Chong because she is the daughter of Tommy Chong from Cheech and Chong. So keep that in mind, listeners, too. But you can remember from a whole slew of movies like Quest for Fire, Soul Man, Commando, Beach Street, Principal, a whole bunch of stuff out there. But she did a great job in there and being on that show as well. Legacy character actor, as I like to call them. All right. So with that, we'll move right along into general thoughts of the first season of the show. So these are overall thoughts of what we think about the show. So Danny, since you're leading the way, your overall thoughts about this whole season.
I really enjoyed it. I was reserved because I wasn't sure how these adaptations were going to take based on the change of race and where the story went and where the story should go. Mm-hmm. But they did a really good job. I loved every aspect of it. I didn't like Claudia in the book, in the movie, and in the show. So they didn't disappoint there. I enjoyed the show as a whole.
Oh, okay, cool. Lara?
Yeah. I went into the series fairly skeptical. I did read Interview with the Vampire long ago. I think I was 14 or so. It didn't stick in my brain all that much. And I, you know, even though I love vampires, ghosts, witches, all of that, I think I was too young to like absorb all of it. And I think some of it just kind of went over my head and I just read it kind of generically. But when I did see the 90s film with Brad Pitt and Tom Cruise, I loved it. It was so close to the book. The adaptation was really, really good. And I thought, even though I'm not a big Tom Cruise fan, I thought he did such an exceptional job. I didn't think anyone could play Louis or Lestat as well as he did. So I was pretty skeptical about it. Also, like Danny, I was skeptical about the sort of the race swap and the time period jump. It takes place like 100 years after the events of the book. So the book takes place in the late 1700s, early 1800s. This is like early 1900s. And I was like, oh no, I want my old gothic romance with vampires and frilly shirts and like, you know, high heels and everything. I'm like, this is not going to feel like the Interview with the Vampire. But I would have to say, after hearing some buzz right off the bat, I thought I'd give it a try. I enjoyed the first episode. It took me a couple of episodes to warm up to Sam Reed's Lestat. But after that, I was like, I can see no other actor playing that role. He was absolutely amazing, as were all the cast members. Like even the the side characters playing like the humans, you know, obviously Daniel Malloy, but like Alderman Fenwick and Tom Anderson, they were all incredible, incredible cast, incredible storytelling. Just the set designs were beautiful and amazing. And this play takes place this season, at least all takes place in New Orleans. And I love New Orleans. It is one of the coolest cities in America.
Awesome. That is cool. I have to agree with you. With my general thoughts, I walked in skeptically. As soon as I saw it advertised, I was like, oh, yes. And then the first thing I thought was like, oh, no, too, because I saw Interview with a Vampire in 94, and I was dragged there by my girlfriend at the time, who was a huge fan, and we spoke about her once before, Lara, you and I. We talked about The Crow years ago on Panels to Pixels podcast.
Yeah.
She brought me to that. And the thing was, she was a devoted reader. So I had to read the book. I did read the book. And I enjoyed the movie for what it was. I said it before and I'll say it again. Brad Pitt, a beautiful man. Back then, from with his long locks of hair, from that particular movie that everybody loved him from and could get lost in the locks in his eyes. I just love the idea because, you know, I thought Brad Pitt actually gave Louis a little bit of a taste. Tom Cruise wasn't my Lestat. I don't know. He played the idea of Lestat and like more of the extremism. I don't know. Maybe it's the craziness in Tom Cruise as it was, but I think Sam Reed pulled it off more so within this. And I want to see the rock star Lestat that we do get in the vampire Lestat from the books come the next, you know, season, hopefully moving into the next season. Because as we leave off at this season, we don't really have like an exact whereabouts of where he's at. We know he was stuck in a coffin. He's there and sucking on whatever and, you know.
Rat blood.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Just like he was talking about how Louis was always sucking on rat blood. But, and then I just loved Claudia. I love the Claudia in his version. They are not the exact replicants of what we get from the book. And I like that aspect because it's kind of clouded in that what me and Danny were talking about before we actually started recording, before you showed up. I don't like that aspect of whitewashing everything. Everything was whitewashed in books and everything where, you know, this is based around the time of slavery and everything. This is showing how somebody is coming out of slavery. I think that's why the depiction is from like the late 1800s to the early 1900s, where it's early in New Orleans. They could depict somebody of color who is actually trying to progress and still struggling, but also trying to make something of themselves, which is amazing. I really love that idea and aspect. But they're also still struggling with themselves. Like, if you look at this, Louis is still struggling with his own sexuality. Mm-hmm. He's still struggling with his own family and with the people who are racists out there. And mm-hmm. on top of that, in Slum City. And he's building up a business. And it's so amazing to see how he works with that. But also in a relationship which is so hostile.
Toxic.
Very toxic from a white man. And I'm like, oh my God. And he doesn't. And the one thing about I could say about Lestat in this, he doesn't see himself as a white man. He sees himself just a person. Same thing.
He doesn't even see himself as a human. He believes himself a higher level than humans.
Well, he could fly. So
yes. He is an evolution from humans.
So yes. But the thing is also we all know that from the character within the book too. So it doesn't really, you know, set themselves estranged from the book from that respect of the character itself of Lestat. So I think this show actually revel in the idea of the characters and who they are innate in personality, who they are in visual and where they stand presently in those times works perfectly within the story that the writers have created, in my opinion. I really think they carved themselves a niche in this. And this is one of the first of many Anne Rice IPs that AMC has created. So this being the first that came out, which was Interview with a Vampire. Next off was Mayfair Witches. Unlike what Paik would say, Mayfair Mitches. Or Wayfair Mitches. Wayfair. I don't know. But, you know, they you know, Rima didn't want to do that. And I understand her concerns of actually covering Wayfair Witches.
Mayfair.
Whatever
now
it is.
We're getting them confused.
Yeah. Oh, damn you, Paik.
Wayfair you buy furniture from. Yeah, Mayfair okay. Is the witch family.
But regardless, they didn't want to, we'll get into the aspect of what you thought of Wayfair Witches. Mayfair Witches. Oh, my God, I did it again.
Yeah, so Paik, and well, when we'll I mentioned before about the race swap and being worried about that, it's obviously not, I don't believe that, I didn't think people of color could play these characters, but the main story about Louis de Pontelac is that he is a plantation owner. He owns slaves. And I'm like, how are they going to make that work? And that's why the time shift actually works. Helps this adaptation. And it's nice. Like, I think the producers of the show did a really good adaptation because they didn't wave their hands to that, you know, very dark history. They didn't say, oh, okay, we're going to make it so that Louis has no association mm-hmm. with slave owning and everything. He is Creole, so he is part Black, part European French. And so his, I think he talks about his grandfather owned that plantation and passed it down to his father, and his father almost ran it into the ground and bankrupted them. And now he's trying to build this life for his family in New Orleans in Storytown. And I thought that was great that they didn't try to erase Louis' history, but made it part of his character.
Yeah, I think that's really what captivates us within that particular aspect of the character within the show. And I think it benefits from it too. I think it also probably will furthermore the character later on down the road, from because they're looking not just of one season, they're looking for multiple seasons. So it's not just one book that we're looking at, ladies and gentlemen. It's more than one book.
Oh yeah, I'll bring that into my depiction of the characters later too.
But I just enjoyed it overall, in my opinion. Like I stated before, and I'm not going to say the name because I screw it up, but they did adapt many. And they're saying 18 books of Anne Rice's that are going to be adapted to AMC at this point, which is going to be interesting. A lot of which is going to be the vampire series that Anne Rice is noted for, as well as the Witches series. So keep that in mind.
I don't mind an adaptation from book to film, as long as they do a good job telling the story and make those changes that they make sense to it as a whole. And as we stated before, having that time jump of it being in the 1920s or like in the 1900s makes that adaptation make sense, because how do you have a Black individual owning slaves, you know? And so you change the time period and it just works. And I feel like they did a great job adapting, you know, the characters into this series.
I also like to think about too of how they were able to get rid of the bodies. Think about how they were burning the bodies in the back of their backyard. The incinerator. You can't get away with that nowadays. Mm-mm. Yeah, it's like, hold on, I'm incinerating this. No, you're not. You can't do that. That's illegal. Nowadays, yeah, you can't just burn food or anything like that, or like rubbish.
The one thing you mentioned, Mark, that they are adapting, you know, all the books of the Vampire Chronicles. And if you listen to the official AMC podcast on this, you find out that Rolin Jones, the showrunner, actually is taking all, excuse me, Vampire Chronicle lovers. I don't know how many books are in the series. I'm thinking it's about 11 or 12. Some count in the series and some don't. But they're actually taking all of those books and wrapping aspects of those characters into this first season of the series, because in the books, if you read the first book, it's all written from Louis's point of view. And at the time he's telling this to Daniel Malloy, he's got quite the axe to grind with Lestat. So Lestat is featured in the book as a bit of a lout, a bit of an idiot. He's illiterate. He's not smart. He's not wealthy. But Rolin Jones took... But as you find out later, Lestat basically becomes the hero of the remaining Vampire Chronicle books. Louis kind of recedes into the background. He's still there, but Lestat becomes the star of all the books. So, you know, you kind of wonder, okay, why are they showing this Lestat as very refined, very smart, where is in the book he's
well, in the first
drawn
book,
out he, to be a bit of an idiot. Yeah.
Yeah. The first book, he's drawn out because it's based upon, like you said, Louis, his idea and thought of Lestat.
Yeah.
Yeah. And
he's different in this. He's actually refined, cultured, wealthy, as opposed to penniless, which he was in the first one. And the talented. Only reason he changed Louis was because he wanted his plantation and his money.
Yeah, but he's also talented, too. There's, as we know from those who are book readers, the vampire Lestat becomes a rock star in the second book. But he also does, in this particular season, which I do love, which goes into one of my favorite scenes, he creates a record for Louis. A one only recording of a song that he wrote and recorded and voiced. And even who was it?
Sam Reed.
Not Sam Reed. Sam Reed himself obviously is Lestat, but I'm talking Bogosian. Daniel Malloy says, he goes, "Wait, am I listening to him now?" Because it was only a one-off. Apparently, there was a master copy because he played it in front of Malloy. And it was of Lestat's voice and him singing a song.
And Sam Reed actually sang that.
Yeah. And I thought that was cool because, as we know, in The Vampire Lestat, he becomes a rock star. And he writes music and lyrics based upon vampirism. It becomes a whole thing, a whole goth background for The Vampire Lestat. So if you thought Typo Negative was such a cool thing to do in the 90s, sorry, it was the Lestat himself. He was the infiltrator of that. Ask my ex-girlfriend. She loved Typo for the fact that it's like, hold on, this is a ripoff. Oh, I like Typo now. Back then. But it was literally about, you know, vampirism. And it was all about his exploits. But a lot of people didn't get that. And they thought, oh, it's rock and roll. But I
have to say, Lestat, for all of his vices, he is like the best gift giver ever. Makes the album for Louis, gives him a Rolls Royce, gives him an ancient book that's like a limited edition copy of something.
Yeah, he gave him a mixtape. but that was one of my favorite moments in it. Is there anything else that you guys have to offer?
No.
How about you, Danny? Nope.
No favorite moments within the actual...
Favorite scenes and episodes?
Oh, I have a lot of favorite scenes.
All right, start off with yours, and then we'll go on to Laura after yours.
All right. So one of my favorite scenes is when the police decides to like raid their estate and Claudia's drunk and they're like, they are going, she's like going through her room and there's like a toe here, there's a finger over here, there's a like partially eaten person in the closet. And I'm just like, oh, they're gonna get caught. This is how they're gonna do this whole like getting caught for some reason. And then it's like the police officer breaks in and she's like, oh my god, I'm changing, what are you doing? I was dying because I was works. Like yeah, I was like, leave it to her to like collect these trophies from all these dead bodies that she's been like devouring. And just Claudia's character, I don't like her, but when you think about it, it makes sense. She's just like, I mean, in the book, she's like 4, and then they like the upper age, which makes sense. Again, if it makes sense to the adaptation, I will appreciate it. Mm-hmm. Which she's a teenager. She's, you know, what do teenagers do? They become, you know, they become sex focused individuals. So all that, just, you know, Claudia is very that, a teenager who wants to not listen to her parents and wants to do things her own ways and has questions about, you know, all these things. So
yeah,
Claudia as a whole is, she's
Claudia as a whole as a character is probably best for this particular show and movie. Yes. Itself too. Also to segue into in comparison to Lara, you and I are the same age. Do you remember the movie Near Dark?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Remember the young boy in that? And he was a preteen. Yes. And mm-hmm. he was turned as a vampire in that particular movie. He had to deal with the fact that I'm 100 years old and I'm still 13.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't gotten through puberty yet. And he can't get with a good woman and everything. That is literally how Claudia goes through with this. In the book, she's like really, really younger. So you're talking like 100-plus-year-old kid or anything,
mm-hmm.
stuck in a little kid's body. But even in the show, the Claudia that we get, decade by decade, she feels it. And same thing with the kid from Near Dark. Yeah. They feel their age. And it's like, And I have to reference, of all things, a show that I love and admire and I suggest every listener to listen to, because they do have a podcast on HBO called Truest Blood. True Blood. So remember that. Deborah Ann Woll plays a character who was a virgin. Mm-hmm. And mind you, she was in her teens when she got turned by the lead character who was a vampire, because she had a turner. She had to relive her breaking her virginity over and over again because she didn't break her hymen.
Yep.
That is the worst for anything, because for a woman, a girl or anything like that to go through that over and over again, it is the worst to go through. And I'm not the person to really be talking about this, but it's one thing that I could be compassionate about. It's like it breaks your heart. Every time you think about that, and it breaks my heart for the fact that they're stuck in that body for decades, if not centuries, and they can't do anything about it until they are either a put to dust or put to rest.
Well, that's why whether it's Near Dark or Interview with the Vampire or Twilight, the rule is you never change a baby into a vampire for these exact reasons. They will resent you for your entire existence because they can never grow into a matured human body.
Yeah, well, we don't talk about sparkling vampires in this podcast. So.
It's a rule. It's a rule in all vampire universes.
It's like I know there are Twilight fans out there, but I'm sorry, I don't deal with sparkling vampires.
Well, I have to stand up and say I actually I loved Kirsten Dunst as Claudia, and I love Bailey Bass is Claudia. She,
there you go.
I have a teenage daughter myself, and like she plays, even though I think she's like 19, she plays a young teenager so well. And I think some people didn't love her accent. I think it's charming. I found her utterly charming and ruthless. So I loved that mix of like sweet innocence and just killer instincts. She's great. I loved her.
They're both very good at the character of Claudia. I do agree. They're amazing. And I think they're the ones that captivate us. One of which, my favorite scene, is on the train. Remember, she was on the train. She was escaping.
Mm-hmm.
That one really got to me. Because you could feel the tension within her. And you thought she was done for, and she wasn't.
Well, you felt her happiness, her joy at finally getting away from that toxic lifestyle. And then you think everything's going to be great. And all of a sudden you hear a scuffle in the other room.
Yep.
And Lestat walks in with the conductor's head in his hand like it's a skull puppet from Hamlet.
Yep.
All aboard! And that's what I just love about Sam Reed's performance. He just relishes this role. Like, he takes it up to 11.
He notches it up more so than what we ever got from Tom Cruise. So this is a Lestat that we should have gotten in the film, but we only got a just short snippet. Now, mind you, they have done a sequel to The Interview with the Vampire called Queen of the Damned. It wasn't that good at all.
It was terrible.
It was terrible. We only got I like to call it the glam rock version of Lestat in music. He turns his whole band into vampires, and they do his whole music career. Not to discredit the actor that played Lestat, I thought he did his best at playing the character. Everything else, as far as musicality, I think they just banked it all on Aaliyah at that point. Remember that?
Yes, that was so true. Because I remember watching the trailers and thinking this movie was about... Okay, so let me go back.
Go ahead.
When I did not know that Interview with a Vampire, Queen of the Damned, that they were anything related to each other or anything like that. So when I watched Interview with the Vampire for the first time, I did not like it. I don't even think I made it through the whole movie. I think I watched like the first 5-10 minutes and I was like, oh yeah, this is not something I'm going to be interested in watching, and then just shut off from it. Queen of the Damned, I loved it because I was a teenager. The music was amazing. Again, I didn't know that this was part of a bigger universe. And then finding out that it's part of this bigger universe and like reading Queen of the Damned and Prince or Lestat book, I'm like, oh, this was terrible. Why did I say it was good? This is not good at all. And then, again, they banked it on Aaliyah. And I thought when I saw the commercials, it was about Aaliyah. And then watching the movie, I was like, oh, she's like in the film for like a whole 10 minutes. It's like, this is not about Aaliyah. This has nothing to do with Aaliyah's character, Akasha. It was one of those things, but
I appreciate that you liked it, Danny. At least maybe you were the target audience. You're younger than us, so you know, you had more of an appreciation for it at the time.
I did have an appreciation for it at the time, not knowing it was a Vampire Chronicle book, not knowing the backstory of anything, just as a film, being a teenager, because I want to say it was released maybe in the late 1990s, it was the early 2000s, because I think it came out like roughly around Valentine's Day, and I remember going with a group of friends because we were all single and we were all like, we're going to go as Valentine dates together to go watch Queen of the Damned because it's the best movie. And I just remember like listening to that music and being like, yeah, this is my time. Ah. It was terrible.
Well, Rotten Tomatoes says it came out in 2002, and apparently the critics didn't like it because it only got a 17%, but audience liked it because it's 66% on an audience score.
That was me! Well, at the time. Now I'm questioning it.
Your tastes have refined.
Yes.
Oh my goodness.
Knowing what I know now.
Well, one of my favorite scenes is Louis and Paul's talk on the rooftop. We don't get much of Paul, but he was in the book and he wasn't in the movie. So I'm glad that they brought him in for the series. His brother, Paul, who is highly religious. And I mean, one of the scenes I liked, it's not this particular one, is when they're all having dinner and he's talking to Lestat and asking Lestat what his relationship with God is. And you get a little sneak peek into what Lestat's backstory is, even though you don't get it in the first book. I believe they've taken it from some of the other books, and you get to hear a little bit about the life he had before and why his relationship with God is very strained.
Yes. I caught that, and I love that part at the dinner table, because I think even when they set the rules, once they let him come back after a chaotic scene, we get a little bit more of Lestat's backstory that we didn't get in the movie or in the book of Interview with the Vampire. We only get it once Vampire Lestat comes out, then we get his backside of the story. But I love that. I love just the back and forth with the brother and Lestat, and just being, it was funny.
And the scene I'm talking about that I loved is when they're up on the roof after the wedding. I loved the wedding. It was great. It's this very ragtime style wedding that his sister has. And they get the tap shoes out and they're tapping. And then the next day they climb out on the roof to watch the sunset. And they have that very sweet heart-to-heart just before Paul kills himself, which was just devastating for Louis. Louis in the show and Louis in the book, it makes him like not even care about living anymore. And that's how Lestat is able to get his hooks into him.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Well, in this, I think Lestat in the show gets his hooks into Louis long before that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Based upon love.
Because in the book, they don't know each other really before Lestat turns him. They don't have that almost month or so of getting to know each other.
And to talk about that, a lot of my favorite scenes are with Louis and Lestat themselves, especially at the time when Louis wants to have that daughter. They get, you know, Bailey Bass as Claudia. And then how they try to hide it from them. And then you see Claudia having her little diary about how she goes, oh, Uncle Louis and Uncle Lestat, they go together into the coffin and they don't want me to see and blah, blah, blah. It's like, it's how they try to hide their relationship from her, even though she knows. It's like, she already knows they're daddy and daddy. That is literally how they are. And the diary of hers, I would love to read, because it will show so much insight into that family dynamic that they have, because it is a family that they are, and it as messed up as it is, but you at least get it. It's like you can't pick a mother or father, but you could see the dominant or the person who caves. Because Lestat would be the one that constantly would manipulate. And I would guess Louis would be the one to be more emotionally grappling in a relationship. You know, I have to think about that, because you can't think of it in sexes. You have to think about it as two mutual spirits together. Mm-hmm. And I'm not trying to think of it as heterosexual, homosexual, or anything. I'm thinking about it as two indivisible beings that are very different but come together, but they're so opposing. And it's kind of like trying to get two opposite ends of a magnet to get together at times. And it's so hard because they want to come together, but they resist each other. Not to point a phrase to it. I don't know, Danny, do you see it my point of view or no?
Yeah, definitely. Okay. And to go off on your story about the whole reading the diaries, because I would love to read the story, her diaries, just because I think they did an amazing job. Because again, this is supposed to be Louis telling his side of what happens. And mm-hmm. So when they bring Claudia in, the way that they, I was like, how are they going to do this? How are they going to go into explaining Claudia's side of everything? And having that episode start off with, you know, being given these diaries and just seeing those journal entries and seeing her evolution of being, like you said, like being very kid-like and then maturing, you know. What I would definitely like to know is those pages that were torn out.
Oh yeah.
What happened with Bruce? I would love to know what happened with Bruce. Because for a while there, I was under the impression that Lestat sent Bruce after Claudia. But after the rewatch, I feel like maybe Lestat had nothing to do with that. And he just was able to read Bruce's thoughts and knows what Bruce did to Claudia and was able to be like, hey, she's going to come back because these vampires are evil and they're not as kind as I am. You know, I am not as evil and demented and won't do these heinous acts. But yeah, I definitely want to see those, you know, even at the end, there was even Daniel Malloy was like, why is there even more pages ripped out? Which I didn't mm-hmm. catch the first time around. Mm-hmm. And it was during that time where Louis meets Armand. And I think that's, you know, because we know that Claudia has this hate towards Louis when he meets Armand and starts to create that bond with Armand. And she's like, well, you have Armand, who do I have? I want someone, you know, I want to have a companion as well. So, you know, I would love to see what that is about.
I also think too, you would think that Claudia would want to make a mother. Somebody that helps her out too. Very similar to the book. And where, yeah. You know, and even in with the movie, they kind of hinted on it at the very end during her demise. It's like, you know, they made somebody and then she treated her like, you know, Claudia as her daughter as sunlight was coming in and they kind of both died together. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if that story comes out. These are things like what Laura's saying is that stuff that came out in later books are coming in to fold into the first season. Mm-hmm. And then a lot of stuff that's being cut out right now, as we see from why did Claudia cut those out, they're going to come back later on. So it's their way of fueling. And whoever started the story writing and screenwriting of the show already developed the idea for the first two or three seasons at least. So they realized,
yes,
it's like we know where to go and where to lead and put in these pieces that Anne Rice has already put in into place to some degree with these characters. So yeah. It'd be great to see where they go from there.
Well, this first season was actually supposed to cover the first book, but the producers at AMC asked if they could even space it out more. So this first season only covers the first half of the first book. I imagine next season is going to be where they go from here. The second half of the book, basically. And I think they have to mix that in with some of the maybe Vampire Lestat book, because otherwise we're not going to see Sam Reed at all until the end. So I think they've got to weave some of that in. And actually the scene with Bruce was my biggest hang up with the whole series. I didn't think he was necessary. I think he's like a small character in one of the later books, but I didn't think that was necessary, that because Claudia decides to break out and go on her own, the only reason that she's going to go back is because of a assumed sexual assault, because that is what the writers of the show want us to lead, want to lead us to. And I think I heard the showrunner, Rollin Jones, basically say that she goes back humbled. And that kind of annoyed me, because I don't feel like women need to be assaulted to learn a lesson and be humbled to go back to their home. I mean, she could have just gotten homesick. She could have decided she just wanted to forgive Louis. And she could have even met some other vampires. I mean, in the books, you find out at this time, in this period, which was 100 years back, there aren't a lot of vampires in this, in the United States. Most of them live in Europe, and most of them, like Lestat said, are cruel and will harm you. But, you know, Claudia doesn't know that. She goes out and discovers, yeah, there are some dangerous things out there. As powerful and as strong and as manipulative as she is, there are things that can harm her. I just felt that they didn't need to roll in a sexual assault to teach her a lesson about the dangers of being out on her own.
I agree with that. I agree with that completely. It doesn't have to be a sexual assault. It could be an emotional assault. Mm-hmm. In a sense that that kid who she meets, who is also a vampire, could have just used her to get more bait or do whatever, and then use that, and then she feeling used in the end. Doesn't necessarily have to be sexual. That was the only drawback to that whole story plot that I hated. I'm like, why are they doing this to this kid?
It's kind of a trope that it is, you know, women get assaulted and then they learn a lesson. Like, that's not necessary anymore.
That was not necessary at all.
That's men writing, I think. I think what they need is women writing. Because you had a woman writer for the show, literally, who created the
book.
And
it's not like Anne Rice is ever afraid from writing that. I mean, read the Mayfair, the Witching Hour, any of her witch books. She doesn't shy away from that. But it wasn't in the books, and I don't know. I found it to be an unusual addition to the story.
Yeah.
Yeah, there are certain things about the show. That was one of them that I just did not want to reflect on purposely, because I just don't like the idea and the aspect.
I was just bringing it up because that was the one misstep I felt like the show took.
But the one step that I like that they take is hitting on the rich and the overprivileged that they do during the blood party.
Mm. Yeah,
where both Claudia and, you know, Louis tried to take advantage of Lestat at that point to try to attack him during that time, especially with the twins. And
yeah,
I was just like, I love this story plot. As evil as I am, sorry, but I just like the idea.
I was like, wow, that's evil.
Was that a surprise to either of you, like how that turned out, though?
No, it didn't.
The twist didn't surprise
for
you?
For me, yes. For me, it did. For me, I was like, oh no, her plan is spoiled. And then once it gets like, she's like, yeah, I knew that you sent Antoinette to spy on us. And then and she's like, they were showing all these. I was like, oh, wow. I guess I should have like realized it when she won that game of chess, and she was like, you have to be 5 steps ahead of Lestat. And I was like, that makes sense. Yep. Mm-hmm. She knew what she was doing. She knew needed. Yeah.
Go ahead. I felt the whole time that she was losing on purpose. Like she picked up on it, and then she just kept losing to Lestat and losing to Lestat, because that's how she was learning how he acts. He wants to be the superior one. The best way to get at Lestat is to get at his ego, which is exactly what she did. She brought up the party. She's like, if we're going to leave here, we're going to leave here on top, and we're going to show these humans what we really are and everything. So she played to his ego, because she knew was the power play that was going to blindside him.
Yes.
But the whole Antoinette thing totally threw me too, because you know it's her. She in the books, of course, and in the movie, she poisons one of the twins, and then he drinks from one of them. They're actually not twins in the book, but she poisons one of them. He drinks from them, and then they of course he dies. But in this, it's not the twins. It's Tom Anderson. It's the person who insulted him like so rudely. Mm-hmm. that he drinks the blood of first, and that's what poisons him.
I think that was the bet. I think that was like on point. Just having that like little hint of like, oh, this is in the book. Like the twins, like the two, he feeds off these two people, and then it's like, nope, he actually fed already from the poison, and we were like thrown for a whole other. I was like, yes, I love that. I love when they do that. I love when you get these little hints of like, oh, okay, so this is what this is gonna happen, and then all of a sudden it's like, nope, this actually happens, and you're like, oh, I like that. I like how they told the story this way. So yeah.
Yeah.
And it's because Lestat is such a petty bitch. I just love it. I love that in his character so much. Like, oh, I smell the poison. I smell something unusual with this twin. I'm not going to drink from him. No, it wasn't him. It was Tom Anderson, because he gave you the like, you know, cold shoulder in his office and, you know, talking to Claudia about her two daddies and just giving the just rudest response. She knew that Lestat would go for him first.
Yep. She's good about that stuff. I just feel like she's catching on and evolving as a character and catching on to like, oh, Lestat thinks he has us in his grips, but he doesn't have me. He has Louis, and I see if being on the outside of this love circle that Lestat has surrounded Louis, and that whole relationship just, that whole relationship.
I think in real life you would never want to have, like, be involved at all in that relationship because it's fantasy, I think we can indulge in it, because Louis and Lestat, that's one of the things I love about this show, is that Sam Reed and Jacob Anderson have the most amazing chemistry with each other. Mm-hmm. And then really it's just like, you see these characters that just really, really love each other so much, but it's so toxic. It's so bad. It is just the worst manipulative, abusive relationship. But you're like, want them to be together, but you don't. And it makes for incredible drama.
It's one of those things that you say to your child at a certain point, here, do not get involved in this kind of a relationship. Read this, come back to me. And if you have any questions, let's talk again.
Yes.
Well, one of my favorite scenes in your life is that the... at the masquerade ball where Louis and Lestat are on the balcony. That is, I mean, give Sam Reed all the awards for that, because that is just such a beautiful scene, because he knows that Louis and Claudia have been planning and plotting to kill him this whole time. And it's like he's giving this one last plea to Louis to not do it. You know, he talks about the city and everything in it. And like, it's just poetry. And it's because they've taken so many lines from Anne Rice's writing to describe this beautiful moment between them.
Mm.
And this story, again, is being told through Louis's perception. So this is what he perceives the relationship being. And after reading The Vampire Lestat, I started to realize, like, oh, like, Lestat is not as terrible. Like, there is a reason for why he's this way. But you're not seeing it through Lestat's point of view. You're seeing it through somebody else's point of view and how they interpret their relationship with Lestat. And like you said, you know, Lestat is an idiot, you know?
Yeah. It literally is Louis' interpretation of what Lestat was saying, how he presented himself. So I'm curious to see if let's say, all right, the first half of next season comes in. It's still the continuation of Louis. Maybe Lestat comes in and gives his perception and we get a twist. And then from the third season, it's like a whole new twist of like, what's going on? What was this relationship wise? Because if you look at it, as Louis is describing how Lestat was to him, during that time. Look at how Louis presents himself to Malloy during the interview and treats him as a guest. His helper, who we already spoke about, I'm forgetting his name.
Armand?
Armand?
At first, he has a different name. At first, he calls him Rashid.
Rashid, yeah, Rashid. That's exactly it. He calls him Rashid, but we think, and the first thing I thought was when I saw him, he's a vampire. Even though he's got colored eyes, whatever, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, okay, he's a vampire. But the way he treats him and the way he treats everybody around him. And then he has that specific light area that Malloy gave him. Like it was like a tree or a plant that only grows in a certain light, but it doesn't affect Louis. And there's this whole story based upon that, which I really do enjoy, for the fact that Louis could actually go there. He takes off his shoes and his socks. He just is able to embrace the light and the plant. But the way he manipulates the help around him, very much like how Lestat treats other people, including Louis himself back then. So is Louis putting himself in the same perspective and mindset and the way he's thinking or remembering of Lestat that time?
Well, that's what I think even Daniel brings up, is Louis an unreliable narrator?
Yes.
Because he plays Louis 30 years ago when he first met him in the 70s, and he talks about how horrible and boorish and stupid Lestat is. And then you hear him in the future, and he said, like, you know, Louis was my furnace in a cold winter or something. He says something like, he speaks more positively and more flowery of Lestat this 30, or maybe I think it's 50 some years later. I don't know. In the books, he meets up with Malloy in the 70s, and we even see Malloy meeting up with Louis in the 70s.
Mm-hmm. Well, it makes me think of this. All right. We think of alcoholics, we think of addicts and things of that nature when they kind of reflect on certain things during that time, whether they are under the substance itself, like alcohol or drugs during that time, they'll think of it at one certain way. And then later on, once they sober up, they think of it as in a different way. It makes me think of the same way with the certain points of view of the character, whether it be Louis, Lestat, or Malloy. Because Malloy at that point was meeting Louis at a bar, and Louis was probably drunk under blood at that point, and then Malloy was drunk under the influence of alcohol and other substances, and taking that information, and that was his interpretation during that time. And in this case, it's Malloy dying at this point and Louis who is not trying to be the succubus and sucking on of every living life form known to man to survive and like taking it almost like a drug and giving him this new story. You know, it's like him. They're kind of even toned at this point, whereas before they were kind of under the influence both ways. It's just my thought and perspective of both characters and where they were in both timestamps. Now, am I thinking a little bit too radically, or am I thinking?
I don't know if Louis was drunk. I know that I have a feeling Louis had been wanting to tell his story, and he read Daniel's mind. And Daniel, he realized, was a writer, and he also knows that he is a drug user. So I believe he kind of used the drugs as a lure to his apartment, but just to give him this interview because he wants to finally tell his story.
That's a good idea and thought.
But, you know, they don't go far. They don't go deep into that scene. It could be.
Yeah. It's all about perception.
He knew all about Daniel.
Yeah, it's all about perception. And my feeling is like, you know, you listeners that are out there, obviously, we're looking to cover season 2 episodically when it does come out. So look forward to hearing us when we do come back and we'll do it episode by episode. So, but if you have any information or thoughts, do leave them in the comments below for when we put this out on Facebook. And then that way, you know, we could do a follow-up with feedback. But I just saw like a whole different story. There could be like two or three different stories within this based upon how perception of character, their position at that point and where they were. And I thought, you know, it's like, oh, that's something to bring up that would be really interesting, because you don't know it from Louis' perspective during the time when he was giving that in the bar. We didn't know where Malloy was, and then we have the present day version of Malloy and Louis, and where Louis is now presently, because he's got a lot of money apparently, lives on a high rise, and he's got Armand as his
unless
little...
that's Armand's money, because Armand is 500 years old. He's had a lot of times for, you know, compound interest to acquire
all that Egyptian money apparently, because in my opinion he could be Egyptian.
He's Venetian, I believe.
We don't know.
But we'll find out, because they've obviously changed his character. Armand does not look like he is from Venice. I think they probably changed his story. Actually, I'm sorry. He's from Europe. He's in the books. He's Eastern European. But they've obviously changed the race of that actor. So I am interested in his backstory.
Same here.
But talking about... point of view and perception, this is, I don't know if this was the scene that made you guys' jaw drop, but the one scene that made my jaw drop and I cannot forget is the fight scene, which minor in the book. In this, I was Claudia when they started fighting, when Claudia came back from being away.
Oh, yes.
And Louis tries to stop Lestat from attacking her. And they go in it and they just destroy the house. I mean, you just see them buzzing everywhere. I mean, I have never seen such an awesome vampire fight. I mean, yeah, there's been like the... like you've had Blade and some other things, but that was just crazy.
And
I did not expect it. They're just going into every room and you just see bookcases falling, walls crumbling, staircases dilapidated. And then you just hear like Louis telling Claudia, it's okay, it's over, don't worry. And then you see them break through the wall like the Kool-Aid man, and he's dragging Louis by like under his chin. He's got his claws up into his mouth, like takes his blood, and then he freaking flies up into the sky. I'm like, this is really incredibly horrible. But I mean, the fact that visually, the showrunners had the balls to like depict this really graphic scene of like basically domestic violence, even though it's between two very powerful vampires. You could tell Lestat has the advantage. He takes Louis up into the sky, and then he has this very kind of heartbreaking scene with him where he tells him, like, just tell me you don't love me. Tell me you don't love me, and I don't have to have this heartbreak. And Louis won't give him anything, and he just drops him, like, thousands of feet down into the down back and good aim. I mean, he lands right back at the townhouse. But that scene shocked me. I did not expect that scene. And I still wonder if it's because it's coming from a skewed point of view or if that actually happened.
Yeah. Hmm. My whole time watching that scene was like, are the neighbors not going to hear this, like, all this crashing? Like, where's the police? Like, are they not coming back or not coming around being like, what's this noise? Why do we sound like demolition? Because it's
tell that whole family is sus. People are always like leaving like Bibles and crosses in front of their house.
Oh yeah, well they know that they're vampires. They think of them as evil anyway. So it's like, all right.
Another thing I do like about that is that they didn't that it isn't a healing process of like overnight. Like it wasn't like he got like beat up and he's all bruised up and then like the next scene he's like healed and looks like normal. This is like he is healing over like months and like the time period, because they're saying like when he gets this vehicle for Louis. Like, he's like, I don't know what came over me that night. And Claudia's like, 3 years ago? He's talking about 3 years ago that night. So you're like, so 3 years has passed. And Lestat has been outside of that house for 3 years. I just like that it's not like an overnight magical healing of, like, you know, it's going to heal, but it didn't happen right away.
And they play that so realistically, too. I mean, if you know anything about abusers, like, that is Lestat. He does something horrific, and then he tries to come back and butter up the person he's in love with gifts and just being completely apologetic and mournful and regretful, but you know they're going to go back to do the same thing. And then, you know, the reason he wins Louis back, it's not expensive gifts, it's not his pledges of love. He wins Louis back by making him jealous by giving him an album that's sung by his lover that they told him that they wanted to get rid of her.
Yeah, which is so funny too, because it's a credit to the writers and the idea of how creative Lestat is, and how we do see where that musical genius in him is. And apparently it's a one-off, and we spoke about this before we actually started recording. And I thought that was like the most incredible thought of, like, okay, it was only one-off, but hold on. You're saying, and Malloy goes, that's the voice of Lestat? He goes, but you said there's only one copy. So apparently there was one acetate and one copy. So he had the acetate master and had another copy made, apparently.
Well, the record he gave to Louis was Antoinette singing, but the one that Louis was playing for Daniel was Lestat singing. So I'm wondering what happened there.
Yeah.
When did Lestat go and record the second?
It was probably a re-recording of it. So it was probably another argument that they had at a certain point, and he re-records it. Was it on an Edison? You know, back in the day, too, because...
That is so true.
Yeah, there's so many ways of recording. You can record, or they had vinyl recording where you actually record on a vinyl itself, and you had the old Edison cones, but this is what, 1920s at this point,
probably close to the 40s, because remember, before Claudia gets it's probably the 20s. I'm trying to remember when Claudia tries to escape on the train, because she's going over to Europe, because it's the beginning of World War II when Claudia gets on the train. Yes. So it was like the 1940s.
Okay.
Because Claudia comes back and they have the huge argument, I think. Yeah, no, never mind. That's maybe later.
No, by the 1940s, we actually do get like mono recordings on tape. So there would be a master tape that would be recorded that would be dumped down to vinyl. So at least we would have Lestat's on a vinyl recording, or have a master analog on Mylar tape. So that would be cool. So hopefully, AMC put out a vinyl recording of the Lestat audio. Yes, let's do that. Okay. Limited edition. It's called Money People. You can make money off of this from fans.
Exactly.
All right. But I really found that. I just love the aspect of that and the idea. And the fact that, you know, Lestat does that based upon, like I said before, the manipulation and craziness of his love and his, you know, you said that. It's like a mixtape. Here, it's like, I love you, but here. Oh, but my girlfriend... Because I try anything. I'm trisexual. I'll try anything. Lestat.
He's non-discriminating.
No, he's not.
In his own words.
You know, I think you would make love to a rock if you had a chance to.
He probably has.
But you know, it's the idea and the idea of Lestat. But, you know, but I think it's ingenious, though, that they have that. And the fact that you stated, you know, it's like we got the, you know, it's like a backhanded compliment. Here, I made this for you, but my lover is singing it. And then later on, you know, he's playing it for Malloy and it's him singing it and it's a remake.
That whole situation, one of the best quotes came out of that where, you know, Malloy was pretty much like, so you took him back, you took Lestat back. And Louis's like, the vampire bond, it's not like equivalent to the human. And it's like, Malloy's like, what do you mean? It's like lover, murderer, maker, you took him back. Like,
yeah.
Like there's no other way to describe this other than that's what happens with abusers. They abuse mm-hmm. and then they're like, oh, I love you. I didn't mean to, like, I don't know what came over me that night. I was, you know, it's not going to happen again, but here's a gift to let you know that, you know, it's not going to happen again. And it's like, it's happening. It's not a one-time thing, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm. And it is realistic to how those type of relationships go. I find it interesting how they're going to get to the point where Lestat almost becomes the protagonist like he is in the books. He eventually becomes one of the biggest protagonists. To come back from something this severe is going to be an uphill battle, but that's why I do wonder if there was some playing around with the narrative and who's telling the story, and something at the end too. We get that shock at the end of Armand revealing himself, which I thought was beautiful as he takes off his gloves and his contacts and just starts rising behind Daniel.
And floating. And,
yes. And Louis says, this mm-hmm. is the vampire Armand. And he says, the love of my life. And they grab hands. To me, that hand grab looked a little forced. And Louis was like, my love of my life. And I'm like, Louis, blink if you hear us. Is this another manipulation or is it his true love?
Yeah.
There was something that was actually mimicked from the movie to the show. And it was Lestat in all white during the party. I don't know if you guys caught that.
Yes.
All right. Remind me exactly of it, because it's just imagery in my head, because I'm just going back in the back of my head about it. It's Lestat all in white, like a wedding dress. And blood all over
his face. Was on the float, he was dressed kind of like Marie Antoinette. He was in this crazy outfit.
Oh, yes. As
the king of the Mardi Gras parade.
That's what I was thinking of. Okay.
But I did love at the end that they wore those period costumes so that they did look like they were in the period that they were supposed to be in the book, the late 1700s, 1800s, this very high Regency style with the ruffled collars and the big puffy sleeves and everything. And like one of my favorite scenes is when they're walking. They've attacked some people at the party and they're walking together. The last time you really get to see them as a family, Louis, Lestat and Claudia all in white, just blood draining from their mouths and like all over their clothes. I'm like, yes, as a vampire lover, I embraced that scene so much.
And family goals. Family goals. And it's so funny too about the arguments and complaints. We talked about the incinerators and how the community hates the fact that they have to smell everything and they put against it. So I think two episodes, they got to that point where it's like, yeah, we're not allowing incinerators in your backyards anymore because of the smell. It's like, yeah, we know you're vampires. We know you're burning bodies, especially the police, because they actually killed some police officers.
That first killing that Claudia does with that police officer, he's a person of importance. Like, you can't kill people that have that are recognizable, that are going to be missed. You know, like, you want to kill, like, I hate to say this, but you're going to kill, like, the homeless, the prostitute, because essentially
people who won't be missed.
Yeah, people who are not going to be missed, who are not going to have someone looking for them, like. But no, especially when Louis gets mad at that one architect who calls him the N-word and flicks him and it's like, oh, you look at you being a smart, mm-hmm. like being smarter than you're supposed to be, you know? And it's like,
so condescending.
Yeah. And it's like, the Lestat goes, we can't kill people of importance. Like, we don't want to draw attention to ourselves. Yeah. I don't know. Let's see here. I feel like I don't recall sex being such a strong factor in the books.
No, it's not at all.
Right?
Vampires don't have sex in the books, really.
That's
like,
what
when
I
they
thought.
Feed off of each other, like how Armand and Louis were doing in front of Daniel, that is their version of intercourse. So it's kind of funny when you watch the TV series, they're like, they're doing it right in front of Daniel.
Yeah.
Because remember the scene where Louis is just sucking on Rashid's neck? You don't know it's Armand at the time. You think it's Rashid. Yeah. But that's when Daniel catches on, too, because he's like, you know, he remembers Louis sucking on this Eastern European guy who was like probably 280 pounds full of muscle. He drains that guy. Well, he didn't drain him. He took the little drink off of him and then that guy just passes out. I mean, Rashid is tiny compared to that guy, and he's like having a full-on blood fest with him,
like,
and
oh,
he doesn't even look lightheaded when he gets up again.
Yeah, and I remember that watching that sex scene between Lestat and Louis in the church. I was like, that's not something that they do.
Mm-hmm.
And if I'm not mistaken, it's all blood. It's all like blood drinking is how they, how they have sex is that way. So that was an interesting.
It's all about the blood. Very much like Blade. Everything's all about the blood. But the funny thing is that, you know, it's like they kind of treat that, you know, like Larry, you were saying, it's like literally the blood sucking is the sexuality within it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they try to give that within this. They do that more or less within Queen of the Damned. They do that with Interview with a Vampire as well. With this, it's. I think a lot of the sexual relations, and I kind of equate it too with whenever we saw Louis and Lestat going into their coffins, like trying to, like, you would see Louis sneak out of his coffin and go into Lestat's coffin. And then they would make conversation about, and then Claudia would write it in her diary saying how it's like, I don't, you know, they don't believe that I see that Uncle Louis would go into Lestat's coffin in the middle of the night. Da, 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 da. But you do see it, and it's fine. And to me, that's fine. It's just that they were trying to hide it for her benefit, which I don't understand half the time anyway, because by then she's about, 20 years old or later anyway.
Well, as a parent, you really don't want to
show that.
Whether you're... Whatever your sexuality is, you don't want your kids knowing what you're up to, you know?
I know.
It's embarrassing.
Yeah, that's true.
But I understand from that perspective. But the thing is that it's like she kind of already realized it 20 years ago. It's like, it's okay. Mm-hmm. It's like, all right, well, we're going to put yours in another room. We're going to go over here. That's all they had to do. But
there's a point where you got to put the kids in the other room.
Exactly. They have their own room, and then they'll pull in a drifter and then suck them dry and throw them out the window.
I will say that I do love how they have this lever that pulls, and then all of a sudden they go from their normal bedroom to like a coffin. I'm like, oh, that's actually pretty like clever to have like mechanism.
Yeah, that's Adam's family thing.
Yes, it's what I've always wanted in my house, is a secret coffin room.
Yeah. I always think wanted that's the cool stairs. Like in yeah. the Monsters. I have a dragon.
Having like a secret room just so that you can have like your own space where you don't, nobody knows and bothers you and you can just like hide.
Danny, that's like a man cave or a she shed.
Interesting. Good to know. Making notes.
Any other scenes
that we want to discuss?
Not really. That was all I had. We could go into interesting and unknown facts about the show, book or screen differences, if you would like.
Sure. Should we each take one?
Sure. Danny, you start us off.
All right. So Anne Rice wrote Interview with a Vampire to cope with grief. In August 1972, the author and her husband lost their 5-year-old daughter, Michelle, to a rare form of leukemia. The following year, Rice, who had recently completed her master's degree in creative writing, quit her job to focus on writing. I pitched myself into writing and made up a story about vampires, Rice told The Independent in 2014. I didn't know at the time, but it was all about my daughter, the loss of her, and the need to go on living with the faith, when faith is shattered.
Right. Yeah. I think that's the reason, the whole reason for Claudia. When you watch the movie, Claudia finds the woman who she wants to turn in, and that woman has lost her daughter, and she wants to have exactly what Claudia is, a child that never grows old and never dies.
Mm.
Yep.
So Interview with the Vampire was written in about 5 weeks. Rice first explored the idea of a reporter interviewing a vampire with a short story called Interview with the Vampire, which she revised several times. After her daughter's death, she pulled the story out again and over the course of 5 weeks in 1973, expanded it into a full-length novel.
Hmm. That's interesting. 5 weeks. Wow. All right. Next up, Interview with the Vampire was heavily influenced by the 1936 Universal horror film Dracula's Daughter. Rice saw Dracula's Daughter when she was a kid and was captivated by its portrayal of the title character as a tormented artist who longed to be human. It established me that what vampires were. These elegant, tragic, sensitive people, Rice said in 2017 interview with the Daily Beast. I was really just going with that feeling when writing Interview with the Vampire. Interesting.
But Anne Rice was not a fan of Bram Stoker's Dracula. In fact, she hadn't even read Stoker's seminal vampire novel when she wrote Interview with a Vampire. Hmm.
The name of Interview with the Vampire's most famous character was a result of misspelling. When Rice named the character who would go on to star in the 1985 sequel, The Vampire Lestat, and headline the rest of the Vampire Chronicles series, she was misremembering a common Creole name. I actually thought I was using an old Louisiana name, Rice said in a 2014 interview at Chicago Humanities Festival. But I was misspelling it. The old name was Lestan. It was several years before she realized her error.
Oh, wow. Well, this wow. thing, the vampire Lestan.
Doesn't have the same ring to it.
No, it doesn't.
No, no not at all.
No. Lestan and Hardy. Sand Laurel and Laurel Hardy. I don't know. All right. Next up, after it was rejected by several publishers, Interview with the Vampire's fortunes changed at a writer's conference. Rice submitted her novel to several agents and editors in 1973, but there were no takers. The following year, she attended Squaw Valley Writers Conference, where, according to the New York Times, staffers read her manuscript and got excited enough to talk it up to her manuscript, NOF editor Victoria Wilson, who was also in attendance. Rice landed in an agent at the conference And that agent happened to be a friend of Wilson's. Wilson loved the manuscript, and before the year was over, Knopf had picked up hardcover rights to Interview with a Vampire, paying Rice a reported $12,000 advance, considerably more than most debut novelists were getting paid at the time, according to Rice, which is pretty cool.
Yeah. Interview with a Vampire landed Anne Rice a stunning paperback rights deal. Rice's $12,000 advance was nothing compared to what laid in store for her in the months leading up to her novel's publication. First, the Literary Guild mailed ordered book club paid $7,500 to add the book to its selection. Then things got serious when Paramount optioned the film rights for $150,000. With paperback rights still on the table, other publishing houses were scrambling to find Xerox copies of the manuscript, and after several rounds of bidding, Ballantine scored paperback rights to Interview with a Vampire for a whopping $700,000. Holy smokes. The equivalent of more than $3 million in today's market. For comparison, Stephen King's non-legendary paperback right sales for Carrie netted him $400,000 just 3 years earlier. Wow.
She got a lot of money.
Good for her.
Yeah,
Anne Rice undertook the substantive rewrite of Interview with the Vampire after she sold the manuscript. According to Rice's website, the book changed dramatically between the initial sale in 1974 and its publication in 1976. Her editor thought the novel petered out towards the end and asked Rice to rework it. So Rice wrote an additional 200 pages. The entire sequence involving the Theater of Vampires was added during the rewrite, as was the return of Lestat. In the original version, the flamboyant vampire died in the fire set by his protégé Louis. In what Rice describes as a very amicable process, she worked with her editor to whittle the manuscript down to the version that would eventually be published. And thank goodness the editor mentioned that, because could you imagine, with no Lestat, they would have had to go forward if she was to do further novels with Louis. And as much as I love Louis, he doesn't have quite Lestat's flamboyance and, drama that he brings to every book.
Yep.
Can I take the next one, Mark?
Yeah, you can take the next one.
Oh, okay. Anne Rice balked at the copy edits she received in Interview with the Vampire. The publishing process is notoriously lengthy one that involves several stages of editing, including substantive edits that address issues such as plot, character, and structure, as well as copy edits, which pertain to things like grammar and sentence structure. Rice was fine with upper-level edits she received on Interview with the Vampire, including the aforementioned rewrite. But she took umbrage at the copy edits that would have, in her view, dramatically altered the book's tone and style. In a process she has described as harrowing, Rice went through the extensive edits with an ink pen and changed them all back.
Number 10, contrary to popular belief, Anne Rice did not base Interview with the Vampire Lestat on Rutger Hauer. In an oft-repeated bit interview with the vampire lore, Rice supposedly named the Dutch actor as the inspiration for Lestat, who played supporting role in Interview with the Vampire, but has since become the star of the ongoing Vampire Chronicle series. But while Hauer certainly entered Rice's mind during Interview with the Vampire's lengthy trek to the big screen, the character was not based on him. I didn't encounter Rutger Hauer till after I had written the Interview with the Vampire, in which Lestat sprang to life pretty much on his own, Rice wrote in a 2015 Facebook post, accompanied by a photo of the actor from the 1973 film Turkish Delight. But this is surely how I see my beloved Brad Prince hero. Brad Prince.
The Brad Prince hero.
Not Brad.
Oh, yeah, he's very much a brat.
Yeah.
Interview with the Vampire is being adapted again, in this time for television. Fans who were disappointed with Neil Jordan's famously troubled 1994 film adaptation should take heart. Interview with the Vampire is being resurrected as a TV series that will hopefully kick off the fury of a new Anne Rice adaptations. AMC, who acquired the rights to 18 of Rice's novels in 2020, has ordered 8 episodes of Interview with the Vampire series that will star Games of Thrones Jacob Anderson as Louis and Australian actor Sam Reed as Lestat. According to Hollywood Reporter, AMC plans to premiere the series in 2022 as an effort to launch a franchise universe based on Rice's universe. The network is also developing a new series based on Rice's life of the Mayfair Witches trilogy.
Yeah, something I should have left out at the very end. This is one that came off of where I got the information. I just threw this in as a joke, but this was from mentalfloss.com, everybody. So, but the thing is that, they bought out all the IP of Anne Rice at that point. They're trying to do their best. Apparently, Interview with the Vampire scored higher in comparison to Mayfair Witches or Wayfair Mitches.
And I was waiting for that. Yeah,
same here. I got it right this time. But the funny thing is that I still watch it. I've yet to get onto episode 4 though. I've not watched that one yet. Lara, have you been watching Mayfair Witches?
I have. I am, as someone who read the entire trilogy, I was actually looking forward to this, but after I saw the trailers, I was a little hesitant, and also seeing the panel at New York Comic Con, I was also hesitant because it doesn't seem to me like the makers or actors of this film are as familiar with the source material as some of the people who did Interview. I think Roland Jones was a big fan of Interview with the Vampire, as is Sam Reed. Sam Reed was a huge, huge fan of it. So took all of his love for the novels into the show, where I don't feel like these people have as much love for it. I think they are probably making it to be more like a series for people who are new to this universe and aren't really familiar with it. They're just trying to make a good show. I will reserve all of my judgment till the end of it. But to me, Anne Rice had a very unique approach, as she did with Interview with the Vampire, but towards witches. Like, this isn't like incantation witches who like dance in the moonlight or even Wiccan or anything like that. I mean, in fact, the entire Mayfair family is almost very devoutly Catholic, but kind of alluding to Anne Rice's Catholicism, both her positives about it and negatives, because she kind of went in and out of her religion often. Mm-hmm. But also Interview with the Vampire was very unique in the way that it was first created, because vampire stories before that were all written from the point of view of like the victims or the people trying to destroy the vampires, where this was written from the point of view of an actual vampire. So they actually become the protagonists of their own story. But like I said, I will reserve my opinion on that till the end to see how it comes out. But right now, as a book reader, I'm not that into it.
I started watching it just thinking of the idea of like, all right, this is interesting. It's Anne Rice. And I was like, interesting. Okay. You lost me at some point. Okay. Got to the second episode. Okay. All right.
As a TV show in general, I just don't find like the dialogue, story writing, or direction to be as sophisticated as Interview with the Vampire was.
Yeah, the Interview was very well thought out. It was very methodical, and they thought about the characters themselves. There was a little bit more passion into Interview than there was with Mayfair Witches, in my opinion. My feeling is, in my thought overall for anybody who's going to start Mayfair Witches, wait till it drops completely on AMC Plus and just watch it as a whole, and then see what you see as a whole at that aspect. Interview, you could actually watch several times as a full season and break it down to the characters, who they are, how they are, and where they're going to be going in the next season, and who you are rooting for. Because just like any other TV show, whether it be The Office, The Walking Dead, greatest American hero. Who knows? Whatever your favorite TV show was in the world, there's always some sort of character that you root for. And whether it be dramatic, comedic, action-packed, or whatever, there's always somebody that you gravitate towards within a story. And I think Interview does it very well, and that's the reason why we're covering this. With that, we're going to move into, well, let's bypass quotes, because quotes are pretty much done.
No, there are so many amazing quotes in the show.
You want quotes?
Yeah. Let's do some quotes.
All right, I hear the crowd screaming quotes.
Go ahead.
According to Lara and
quotes,
Danny. So.
Quotes.
Okay, all right, here we go. All right, you guys start it off.
I'll let you start it off, Laura.
Okay. One of my favorite quotes is, I feel Lestat had an abundance of amazing quotes in this, but this is one that I did love from Louis after meeting with I think he was the attorney of the men who were going to buy his nightclub. And, you know, he had been so condescending to them, saying he was an exceptional Negro and all this ridiculousness. And then Louis just comes back with, "It was both random and unfortunate the man picked that night to dabble in fuckery." I just thought he expressed that so well just before he kills him, just before he sinks his teeth into him.
Oh, my. Well, I have one that's a little bit out of place, and that would be from Daniel Malloy himself saying, "So, Mr. DeLock, how long have you been dead?"
Mm-hmm.
Which and starts off the interview.
Off the show. Yes. Yep. Have you got one, Danny?
Well, the only one that I had was the one where he took him back. Let's see here. I do like when Claudia's being petty and Louis like, "You're ugly when you act that way." And Claudia's mm-hmm. like, "Better ugly than blind."
Lara?
I like when they're having the fight at the incinerator after Louis kills the attorney and Lestat says to him, "You are a library of confusion," which I think Sam did a pretty good French accent throughout this entire series. And then Lestat, after Louis tells him to, you know, he's like, "Fuck you." And Lestat says, "Va te faire foutre aussi." Because I know some French, but I never knew how to say "fuck you too" in French. And I love it when they throw in the French, just like Claudia. I said, it's so funny when they fight in French.
Bunch of merde.
De la merde.
Yeah, exactly. I have a couple, actually one from Louis saying, referring to the morning his brother had died, saying, "I hate the sunrise and the reminder it brings." So basically of death and having to sleep all the time.
Mm-hmm.
I'll start to Louis saying before he turns him, "The rage you must feel as you choke on your sorrow." Another one from Lestat would be to Louis before bed, "You're a challenge every sunset."
That's what made him love Louis so much.
Yeah.
Louis was a challenge. I love when they're going to watch, Louis and Lestat are sitting in the car watching Claudia prepare for her first hunt. And Lestat says that he doesn't like that skirt on her. And Louis says, "It's chiffon. It has movement." I thought that was one of the best lines of just them being a regular couple and parents.
Yeah.
And then the last one that I liked was a whole little scene where they take the soprano when, you know, Lestat is being his typical petty self and he's insulted by the soprano at the opera and he's like, cuts his finger and in blood, he's marking every point on the notes that the soprano doesn't hit correctly. Then they take him back to his place and, Lestat gets uppity again and pokes him through the neck just enough to like let him bleed, but also so he can't scream. Yeah. And Louis says, "Why do you do that, Lestat?" Lestat's response is, "Well, I like to do it. I enjoy it." Louis says, "Well, I don't. You don't have to humiliate them." And Lestat, oh, it's a great scene. And it comes from the book. It was in the movie. He says, "Well, you don't have to enjoy it. Kill them swiftly if you have to, but do it. Embrace what you are. You are a killer, Louis." Sam does that with such relish that I can't see anyone else be Lestat but him now.
Yeah, he's got the face for it, I think.
Oh, yeah.
I think he's perfect for it. I can't wait to see him in full
good looks.
Well, I can't wait to see him as a full rock star with the long hair. I have to say,
I really love Jacob Anderson as Louis too. I know Louis is kind of, he plays sort of the, you know, more laid back character, and I never liked Brad as Louis. I mean, he's a very handsome man, but he played him as such a sad boy and just being kicked around all the time. And I feel like Louis does have a little more agency in this, even though, you know,
he does.
He's part of this toxic relationship. He pushes back at Lestat as much as Lestat pushes him.
Oh, definitely. And the funny thing is too, my girlfriend at the time when I saw the movie and who made me read the book and everything, she even said it. She goes, back then, she says, he's such a pansy boy. Da, 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 da. I was like, and I read it. I'm like, yeah, he is. He's pansy. Well,
I don't know. To me, Brad Pitt played it just like, I am bored entire movie. I am whiny and bored this entire movie. Where here, Jacob Anderson, he had some humor. He showed, you know, more. He just showed more spark as Louis.
Yeah, he reminded. It's like, I don't know. I'm gonna get Star Wars fans really upset with me when I say this. He reminds me of Luke Skywalker, very whiny. But I just want to go to Tarji Station, get some power converters, and then he's like constantly really upset, and then it's like, oh, I want this person, but I can't have them. It's like, Louis, it's like in the book and interview, but with this one, he had a little bit more bite. So I'm like, oh, I'm like looking forward to seeing this Louis than now. those two that we got.
Especially when he goes after Alderman Fenwick.
Yeah.
We didn't mention that scene, but that is amazing when he's like, they're trying to shut down his club and all of this stuff. They're just playing him around, and he shows up at his place, you know, just out of nowhere, attacks the man, and he finally admits, I'm a vampire. And it's like, yes, thank you, Louis, for embracing your vampire side.
Yes, he finally came out. He embraces himself. Awesome.
Yes.
So cool. All right. Well, I think we kind of threw this into the coffin.
Squeezed all the blood out of that one?
I think so, yeah. All dried up, ready to be covered. So we open it up again for season two. So what we'll do is, with Adrenaline Cinema Podcast, what we normally do is go into guilty pleasure movies or movies that we like to suggest or things that we are into now. I usually call them guilty pleasure movies because these are things that other people don't like, but you just like. But, you know, other people go, they suck or no, whatever. Honestly, it's whatever you want to offer up and say, hey, this is what I'm into right now. What is something that you're watching now that not other people are watching right now that you like? Because obviously the biggest thing right now is obviously Poker Face, The Last of Us, everything else. But there's a whole bunch of other shows that are out there that have come in 2021, 22 that people are just getting around or are looking forward to, or people just have passed over. Something that you've been watching. Anything interesting?
So Amazon Prime did a adaptation to this like D&D critical role thing called Vox Machina. And it's an animated series. It just released the second season like a week ago. And that show, if you are into D&D, critical role play, that show is for you.
Okay, cool.
I highly recommend it.
Is that animated, Danny?
It is.
That's awesome.
Well, since you mentioned that, I thought of an animated show that actually me and my daughter watched together. My daughter is really into anime, and you know, so am I too, but I hadn't watched any newer anime. And she got me into it, and I will mention it here because I think the third and final part of its last season is coming up in March. But if either of you have ever seen Attack on Titan,
oh yeah,
it's an anime, Japanese anime, really amazing. Oh, okay. I mean, I thought it was just going to be creepy and scary. It's about these people who live in this town. It looks like a sort of a walled medieval town, and they're constantly attacked by these gigantic humanoid creatures that come in and occasionally scoop up humans and eat them. But there is so much more to that story and a lot of twists that you don't expect. But it's fine. I mean, some of the fans of the show have had to wait years and years in between seasons.
Yes.
And so I believe they're supposed to be on the final season and they broke it into three parts. The final and last part is coming up in March. So if you don't want to have to wait years like other fans have had to in between seasons, wait until after, I think, March 2nd it comes out or so, and you can just binge the entire series. It's really good.
Yeah, I you're saying Attack on Titan. Yeah, I've known that for years and it's amazing. Mm-hmm. I love it too. Yeah, anything kaiju like that, it's really cool. I'm all into it. So with yours, Danny, it's on Amazon, and Lara, yours is
Attack
on Titan. You can watch it on Hulu.
Hulu?
Oh, it's on Hulu. Yeah.
Uh-huh. Okay. Mine would be Heels.
Yeah.
That has Stephen Amell in it. And that's a wrestling show. It's about a family wrestling group in Atlanta, I believe. And it's a league. And it's kind of through the drama of all that stuff. Came out in 2021. They have a season two. Season one only came out in 2021. And I'm like, wait a minute. I just watched the first episode for free on Stars, but it came out in 2021, but you could get the whole season. I was like, all right, I'll get the whole season. So I got the whole season. When's the new season? Well, apparently they filmed season two, but it's still coming out. They figure by May of 2023, we'll get Heels season two. They're in the process of filming season three. So check that out. If you're a fan of wrestling, AEW, WWE, WCW, all that good stuff. It's very similar, but this is like kind of like a small town wrestling family that tries to do their own minor league and tribes and tribulations that go around about doing that. And I think it's pretty cool. Like I said, Stephen Amell's in it and a bunch of other people. And I really do enjoy it. It's on Stars. So you could at least get season one going on with that. So check that out. Next up would be, where can listeners hear you? So obviously, Lara?
Well, I just pop in and out. I don't have anything regular that I do, except for when Steve and I did
The Witcher
over on Panels to Pixels. We have discussed doing Witcher Blood Origin, but It's whenever Steve is available. And actually, I can't even watch it right now because I canceled my Netflix account so that I could pick up HBO Max so that I could cheat on Netflix and watch The Last of Us. So yeah, once The Last of Us is over, I'll consider going back to Netflix. But I'm having a little bit of a fling with HBO Max.
Same here. I'm having that fling too, watching The Last of Us as well. You also were on Sandman Cast with myself and Jamie when we did that on Podcastica. That was fun. You were also on Panels to Pixels podcast, and you and I did The Crow.
That's right.
And Danny, you were on Run for Your Lives on Podcastica at one point too, weren't you?
No, I actually have not actually did an actual I lied. I did Tales of the Walking Dead. Did do one of the episodes there, and I'm sure that Jason will bring me on to talk about Fear of the Walking Dead as it's the final season. I can't believe it. I'm kidding. I play off that I'm like Fear of the Walking Dead's number one fan, but it's a joke. I mean.
Sometimes
it's a good show.
I know.
Sometimes. So I'm sure Jason will probably have me on to discuss Fear of the Walking Dead. I haven't really been on many podcasts, so this is kind of.
Oh, I thought you were on a couple of before. All right. Sorry.
No.
but as all the listeners will know, Danny will be back on for season two of Interview with a Vampire, as we do it episodically. So look forward to hearing Danny's voice in the future. As far as myself, well, obviously you guys know me. I've been here on Adrenaline Cinema Podcast. I tried to do this when we started it out. It's supposed to be a bi-monthly or monthly podcast. It's kind of been sporadic here and there. We're trying to get as much out as content as we can. This was a one-off. It was a kind of a TV-oriented. I haven't done anything like this, and I really wanted that. That's why I wanted to spotlight Danny on this, because I think this falls more into his queue of his style of thinking and his shows. So hopefully in time when season two comes out, he will be the host, and all I have to do is hang back. How's that? All right. And then as far as like other movies that have come out that we've covered, look forward to Invasions of the Body Snatchers with Jerry and myself. That was from 1970s. We covered that. We are looking to cover, of all things, Death Trap with Christopher Reeve and Michael Caine. So our friend Jeff and I are covering that particular movie coming up soon. And there will be more. Now You See Me is another movie that's in the process. I'm looking for people to host with that particular film, which I really did enjoy. I threw that there, but nobody really took. So it's still on Facebook. So if you guys want to say, hey, I want in on it, let me know. All right. And then other than that, you could hear me on Panels to Pixels podcast. Rob and I just completed and finalized Umbrella Academy season 3. So with that, we're moving on to Peacemaker season 1 as a whole, just like this. But when we come back, hopefully Peacemaker season 2 will be on episodically, and we'll be covering that. If not, if it doesn't come out before then, guess what we'll be doing? Another movie. A movie that will be interesting, that either you either really hated or you really liked. So you're going to have to keep yourself present. So all you have to do is look at facebook.com/panels2pixels and then just look for the image that we're covering. And like I said before, and I always say it at every end of every podcast, to submit your feedback, all you have to do is go to our Facebook group, facebook.com/adrenalinecinemapodcast. There you can find our image of topics that we're covering and leave a comment at the thread just below the image. Or you can just email us at adrenalinecinemapodcast@gmail.com. There you can send a regular email. You can just type out your thoughts and send it at adrenalinecinemapodcast@gmail.com. Or you just record yourself just like Steve does at various different podcasts. And they'll play it just like we would if we get it. And you can be part of the podcast itself and save it as an attachment and send it in an email. If you have any questions, just leave them in your comments. Anything else that you want to hear that's on the PyroCore Entertainment Network, all you have to do is go to PyroCoreEntertainment.com. And there you could find links for Kirk Manley, who does all our podcast artwork for Panels to Pixels podcast, Adrenaline Cinema podcast, as well as PyroCore Entertainment. You could find links to Watched It in the 80s with Damien. And Damien just put out another great podcast. Check that out there. And Fantasy Picks Movie Edition with Rob. But Rob will be back. He's on a hiatus right now. So you might hear more of him on Panels to Pixels podcast and Adrenaline Cinema podcast. But other than that, that was our show. So Danny, take us out.
Thank you for listening to us. And we'll see what season 2 of Interview the Vampire brings us. Hopefully some good stuff.
Yeah. Awesome.
Great. Thanks, everyone.
Thank you.
For listening.
Goodbye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.